So I'm assuming everybody can hear me okay. If not, please let me know. So today I'm going to talk about robust optimization. It's a fairly new topic, and it's also very wide. There's many different applications. Some of the things I actually will not mention, for example, are you can use it to give some consideration when it's hard to implement solutions, when there's some error in the implementation of the solution or some error in the data. So you can actually use robust optimization techniques for that. But today I'm going to concentrate mostly on how robust optimization can be used to controlling risk in different optimization problems, and in particular how they relate to another topic that's perhaps more well-studied, which is risk measures. So I won't be able to really tell you everything about it, but I'm going to try to make my best to convince you that it is an interesting tool and it's worth trying it and maybe learning more about it. So maybe my motivation is essentially in optimization problems we'll have some decision variables, but sometimes these decision variables will affect our outcomes in some random way. And we can imagine that as just simply having a random variable that depends on our decision variables, and that random variable is going to be our outcome. Maybe our profits or maybe our losses. And we have to incorporate this random variable into the optimization problem. And optimization problems don't really like random variables. They really like specific numbers. So we need to try to transform these random variables or summarize them with one scalar. And one usual way to do this is simply look at the average of the random variable or its expectation, and maybe maximize or minimizing depending on what the random variable actually means. So then we get a summary of a single number that tells us, in average, this random variable is going to behave this way. Another option is maybe incorporate this random variable into a probabilistic constraint or chance constraint that essentially shows up as a constraint in the problem that says, we don't want this random variable to be a very large, so we are only going to, but we don't want it to be very large all the time, so we might actually allow it to be larger, but only with very low probability. Now, the problem with the expected average or the average or expected value approach is that there's really no consideration for risk control. We're only looking at the average, and we don't really care about what happens when we deviate with the average. So that's something that we need to solve. The problem with probabilistic constraints is that these yield problems that are very, very hard to solve in practice. Now, one way that we could actually try to incorporate risk into the expectation is to, instead of using the expectation, use some other measure that summarizes a random variable, and these are that actually, in addition to calculating averages or something like that, adds some measure of risk control. Another option, again, on the side of the probabilistic constraints, we could try to make them easier by considering robust constraints that will approximate conservatively these chance constraints. And these robust constraints, maybe this is the first time I'm going to show you what robust constraints are essentially you'll have a series of constraints, one constraint for each realization, and you choose a set of the realizations, and you say, I'm going to satisfy this constraint for every realization. And I'll give an example, a more specific example, later in the talk. But they look like this. I have some constraint with some parameter. I'm saying satisfy for every parameter in some set. And usually this is going to be very complicated. It's in principle a semi-infinite problem, but there is easy ways to actually write a clear and simple constraint. Now, the interesting thing is, and in fact, these risk measures and robust constraints are in a very precise way equivalent. So I'm going to try to show you that too. So in essence, there's different ways of dealing with randomness end up being exactly the same. So let me move on to slide 3, which is the overview. So I'm going to start by going over a little bit of what risk measures are, and I'm going to use a very specific portfolio optimization example to kind of motivate why these risk measures are useful. After that, it'll naturally show up that there is a way of writing some probabilistic constraints that are related with these risk measures, and that will lead us to looking at how robust constraints can be used to approximate probabilistic constraints. And finally, I'm going to give some I'm going to try to avoid as much as I can in the first two parts any mention of probabilities or any complicated probabilistic concepts. So at the end, if there's time, I'll give you a quick summary of how what I said sort of qualitatively relates to probabilistic concepts. And finally, maybe some conclusions about sort of what can you do with with robust constraints and with risk measures. So let me move to slide 4. So let me start with the risk measure portion of the talk. And the motivating example will be a very simple portfolio optimization problem. I'm going to assume I can invest in 20 assets, and my decision variables are essentially how many millions of dollars I invest on each asset. And I'm going to assume I have a budget of $1 million, and how much I'm going to receive after, let's say, one period will depend on some rate of return, which is going to be random. Now, you'll see that I'm taking sort of the pessimistic way, and instead of trying to maximize how much I have at the end of the period, I'm going to minimize the loss. So I started with $1 million. That sum from I 1 to 20 of the W omega I x I's is what I'm going to get at the end of the period. So I want to see that will be exactly what's inside the expectation is a loss. Now, that loss, of course, is random, so I need to try to summarize it in some scalar way, and I use the average or expected value for that. So I'm essentially minimizing my expected loss after a period. Now, of course, this will usually give solutions that you don't like because there's really no control for risk, and it's going to try to cheat and get solutions that are very risky, but in average give you good profits. So a usual way of adding some risk control is, for example, add a variance constraint, and this is essentially the minimized loss version of the standard Markowitz portfolio optimization problem. So this essentially, we add some constraint that says we don't want our portfolio, the variability of our portfolio, to be very widely. So let me show you for a specific case where I essentially assume that there's 100 scenarios for the random rate of returns. Let's see how my profits look. And essentially, what I have here is I'm drawing the histogram showing the distribution of my returns for the optimal solution that I calculated. I'm doing it for average, and for just average, and then for average plus this standard or deviation or variance constraint. And I'm showing the histogram, and also showing this usual box and whiskers graphs. And essentially let me describe it on this one on the bottom. So I'm in slide 5, by the way, now. So this is essentially the minimum of the random variable. This is the maximum of the random variable. This dot over there is the expected value or average. This line over here is the median. And this is some certain quantiles. Essentially, what you want to know is that most of the mass is inside this box. And you can kind of tell it if you look at the histogram, let's say up here, most of the mass is actually around this area. Now, you'll see that the average tries to get a good average. And again, higher values are bad, lower values are better because there's losses. So negative losses will mean profits. And again, the idea that I'm using this is when I'm trying to control risk, it's natural to say big numbers are bad because that's high risk. Okay? So if you see when you just do the average essentially cheats and gives you essentially on one scenario a very low loss or a very high profit, and everything else ends up being way to the loss side. On the other hand, the variance constraint is not allowed to do this cheating, and then becomes much more concentrated around the mean. The problem, of course, is variance actually penalizes both ways. It's penalizing that you get high losses, but it's very also penalizing if you have high profits. So it's not really well suited to sort of model what we actually had in mind, which is I minimize my losses, and I don't want my losses, average loss to be, or the actual losses to deviate too much from the average, but to the loss side, not necessarily to the, I'm okay if I win more than I was expecting to. Okay, so let me now move to slide 6, and I'm going to now be more specific about my example. And essentially, the way I'm going to measure uncertainty or randomness is through scenarios. So I'm going to assume my rate of returns omega can be under, omega is a vector, so it's a random vector, and I'm going to assume it can take 100 possible values. So there's 100 vectors of returns for each one of the 20 assets that I assume this is what could happen, and I'm going to assume that they have the same probability. Now, I could choose a different probability. The reason what I'm taking here, and we'll see at the end that, in fact, in some sense, we're going to avoid assuming any probabilities, but I'm just going to put the equal probability to start, and mainly the assumption is, in some sense, if I don't know what the probabilities of the scenarios are, I might as well just say they're equal. And we'll see that the rest measures will allow us to sort of bypass defining the probability beforehand. So I mentioned that the loss of random variables, so now let me be more specific. We have a random variable, again, it depends on X, so this is where X shows up, and it depends as a random variable, so it depends on the actual realization of the returns. So this is exactly random variable, and I don't want to worry much about the formula, so I'm simply going to say, well, this random variable can take 100 possible values, and now these are essentially the scenarios for that random variable, given that I picked a specific X. And the definition of these possible values is simply, again, I apply the formula. But I don't want to be referring to the formula all the time, so I'm just going to assume I have this scenarios. So as I mentioned, we want to try to get some scalar representation of this random variable, and the usual scalar representation is just the expected value, and it's simply calculating the average. As I said, the random variable could take these 100 possible scenarios, so I just average them, and that's going to be my expected value. Okay? So let me go to slide 7. And as I mentioned, this expected value doesn't really incorporate any consideration for risk. So let's see if we can summarize this random variable in such a way that it considers risk. And again, remember, this random variable simply is distributed uniformly over these 100 scenarios. And I'm going to start taking a very pessimistic approach. I'm simply going to take my scalar representation of random variable to simply be the worst possible scenario. Okay? And again, because high losses are bad, the worst possible scenario is the maximum over all possible scenarios. So that clearly considers risk because it's telling me, look at the worst case, that's what I want to optimize. So I'm guaranteeing that whatever number I give you, I'll never be worse than what I told you. So it's a very, very conservative and pessimistic approach. Now, a slightly less pessimistic approach could be simply say, well, I don't want to look at the worst case, but maybe I'll look at the second worst case, or the third, or the case worst case. And now the only guarantee I'm giving is whatever number I'm giving you, at most case scenarios can be equal or worse than this number I'm telling you. So let me illustrate that with a picture. So suppose, again, I have 100 scenarios, so scenarios are in X, and I'm plotting the value of this random variable for each scenario for one specific portfolio that I selected. I fix X, and look at how this portfolio, the loss of this portfolio is distributed. So that's what I'm plotting here. And what I'm going to do is simply pick these random values, sort them, and now I said I'm going to look at the worst case for the case worst case for k equal 10, so the 10th worst case. I just look at 10, I sort them in decreasing order, worst first, better last. I look at the 10th, and I now know that this measure W worst case 10 is going to be 0.8. And of course I have a parameter here that tells me which is the worst case. I could simply say worst case of 1, which is going to be the absolute worst case. In this case, I'm choosing 10, so because it has 100 scenarios, I'm essentially saying I'm going to give you a number which is 0.8, and at most 10% of my scenarios could be equal or worse.
Sorry, just a brief interruption. It looks like somebody has not their mute, so we're having a lot of background noise, so we'd really appreciate to make sure that you are on mute or you don't minimize the background noises. Sorry for the interruption, okay?
Okay, so, and of course there's a parameter here that we're going to have to choose, and we have some freedom on that, but well, let's assume that there's some way of choosing how risk-averse you are. So the higher the K, the less the risk averse. Yes?
Negative values means you do have a profit, right?
Negative values mean profit, right.
Right.
Yeah. So I invested, so essentially, if you look at these ones over here, I invested 1 million. So these scenarios essentially say I lost everything. These over here say I didn't lose anything. And the ones that are negatives tell me how much I actually gained. So in this case, let's say here, I actually got $400,000 of profit after this single period. So again, and the idea is that risks measure sort of naturally want to say that high values are the ones that are bad. So they kind of look at the lost values. You can always sort of look at profits by just sort of looking at minus the profit in such of the way I was doing here. Okay, so it's very simple to calculate these for a given random variable. It's fairly easy to calculate these values. Now, they're parametrized by this value, so this might be by the actual portfolio that I chose. So this might actually be a little problem than on the optimization, but I'm going to get there in a minute. So everybody clear on sort of what the measure essentially is looking at? You're just picking the kth worst value. Okay? Now, this kth worst value, as I said, it's going to have some trouble in the implementation, so I'm going to try to make it easier by just taking an even more conservative approach. So the kth worst value tells me I'm going to look at the kth worst value and the only, let's say, 10th worst value. There's only going to be 10 that are going to be worse than what I told you. But I don't really know how much worse. They could be significantly worse. So I'm saying after those 10 worst scenarios, I don't really care what they are. I only care about the 10th. So a more conservative approach would say, well, instead of looking at the 10th worst, maybe I should try to look at an average of the worst. And if you remember, the average essentially takes the average of all the scenarios. Now I'm saying, well, what if we take the average of the kth worst? So let's say in the specific case that I take the average of the first, it's simply going to be the worst value. Now, if I take the average of, let's say, I pick k over here to be 100, I'm essentially going back to the average. So now the interesting thing is now I have a risk measure that has some parameter that controls how conservative I am that goes all the way from the average, which essentially doesn't consider risk at all, which would be k equal to 100, and all the way to the worst case would be the most conservative approach, which essentially put in a 1 here. So now I get a slightly better meaning because, again, the worst case went from the maximum, which definitely makes sense, which is if I'm terribly risk-averse, but it goes all the way to the minimum, which doesn't really give me much information. This one will go all the way from the maximum, but will end up at the average of all scenarios, which is something I'm somewhat used to. Now, the other interesting thing about this measure is that it's fairly easy to see that for the same parameter, the average worst case will always be bigger than the worst case. So it's an upper bound. So if in a sense I really wanted to look at the worst case, the average worst case is simply a more conservative way to look at the worst case. Now, this average worst case will have other properties that are more interesting compared to the worst case, and it's also going to be easy to implement. But before that, let me give you a couple examples of how these two measures look like. I mean, when we apply it to, again, this specific portfolio optimization problem. So let me go to slide 10. And again, I introduced two measures that essentially replace the expected value or the average. So now I can simply define two new portfolio optimization problems that essentially, instead of taking the expectation as the objective function, take the worst case or the average worst case. So now I have these two families of problems. I want to see how do these solutions compare to taking the expectation. So let me move to slide 11. And again, I'm going to show you these box and whisker graphs. I'm not going to give you the expectation because we know it already cheats by giving me this very very high profit scenario, a portfolio that gives you very high profit on a single scenario. So I'm going to consider this variance constrained expectation. So on the top we see the worst case parametrized. I have first worst case, 5th, 10th, and 15th. On the bottom, I have the same, but for the average worst case. Some things that we can easily see is, for example, the worst case is very conservative. And actually, let me clarify one thing. This dot now, this black dot on each one of the graphs, is giving me the value that the optimization problem gave me. That's the value that optimization thinks is the optimal. So, of course, the worst case, if I plot the distribution of that particular portfolio, it gave me the worst case. So it's exactly the worst case. In this one, for example, it's giving me the 5th worst case, so I know it's not the worst because there's 5 scenarios that are in this range. So if you look at the average, the variance constraints expectation, the value the portfolio is giving me doesn't really tell me anything about this distribution. On the other hand, the worst case really tells me I'm giving you a value and everything that could happen is on the good side of this value. Okay? So it gives me a little bit more information about the risk. What are the things we can see now? The interesting thing is that the worst case does, in fact, control risk. If you see, the worst case of the averages are really usually better than the worst case of the variance constraint, but it doesn't really penalize the good side. So let's look at the worst case with the parameter, with the 15th worst case. The worst case is pretty much the same. The distribution pretty much looks the same as the variance, but the variance constrains me immediately what this very good scenario could be. This one doesn't. So I do get a scenario where I do get, let's say, something like $0.7 million of profit. Okay? Now, if you see, one would expect that these values are really, I mean, this is more conservative than this one. But when we optimize, the thing that you're going to get, there's going to be some change in the solution. The optimization looks at this objective function, and what you get might not be translated very well to the solutions. So if you see, you don't really get a clear containment of, let's say, the minimum and maximum, or something that's non-decreasing on the maximum. It somewhat varies. And this is something of a behavior of the worst case. The average worst case seems a little bit more consistent, but sometimes it still jumps. Now, what it is true about the average is that the value it's giving you is definitely more conservative. If you look at, say, the average worst case with the fifth worst case, it tells you a number that doesn't really consider what happens on the worst cases. The average fifth worst case does, in fact, consider that, and it's way more conservative. So it's a little bit more stable and a little bit more conservative, and in the next couple of slides, I'm going to argue a little bit more about why the average worst case is better than the worst case. So here's another comparison of the average worst case. Again, if you see, this is the value it's reporting. They're pretty much the same, but the worst case allows you to have a lot of mass on the right-hand side. The average worst case allows you to get the same mass in some sense. I mean, it's exactly the same mass, but if you see, most of it is concentrated on this sort of small losses. The worst case has small losses, but also has a pretty decent portion with even larger losses. The other thing is that the worst case also can try cheating and sort of giving this high risk or this high profit single scenarios. And the average worst case usually doesn't do that. So it's a little bit more stable in some sense. I mentioned there is some probabilistic meaning I'm just putting here, so in case you're actually familiar with the value at risk, this is really a probabilistic definition. It's fairly easy to see that this sort of is what we were doing. The only, if you're familiar with it, then there's a link. If you're not familiar with it, the only thing I want to tell you in this slide is essentially that the average, so the worst case, has some probability. It looks like probabilistic or chance constraint. And this is essentially why this problem is complicated. If you're familiar, if you've played with probabilistic constraint, you'll know that these things usually going to lead to things that are non-convex, and hence they're going to be hard to solve. So let me, instead of go over the slide in detail, let me just plot. I'm going to plot the worst case, the k-worst case, and the average k-worst case for the portfolio optimization, but I'm going to assume there's essentially just two assets, which is, given that they sum up to one, it's essentially the same thing, and there's just one asset. I'm going to plot the objective function with respect to that single asset. So it gives an idea of what the shape of these things are. So above in green, we have the average worst case. And below in kind of orange, we have the worst case. And it's fairly clear, two things. The worst case is non-convex. So here we have a non-convexity. Here we have a non-convexity. On the other hand, the average worst case is convex. So that's good. We're minimizing, so convex is actually what we want. And the other thing is that the average worst case is definitely an upper bound and an approximation of the worst case. It usually is pretty tight. It's not always the case, but it usually looks like the best convex approximation upper approximation of the worst case. Okay? So it's a way of, sometimes it actually happens that if you look at this minimum, the minimum of the green function, the average worst case, is about the same as the minimum of the worst case. So essentially minimizing the average worst case would give us the same value, and this should be significantly easier. Of course, in this 2D picture, it doesn't look too terrible, but imagine a non-convex function on the 20 assets will be significantly more complicated. And this sometimes happens, so this is sort of like the best case you could expect. Doesn't always happen, but usually it's a good approximation, so you can change it. So if you look at it purely from, I have some non-convex function, I would like to minimize it, I'd rather minimize some convex approximation. And this gives it to you for free. Okay? So again, I'm going to switch to slide 15 and talk a little bit about this convexity. And what I want to show you now is essentially convexity, how it relates to coherence and risk measures. And coherence is essentially giving some properties of risk measures that make sense for controlling risk. And essentially what I'm going to try to show you, I'm going to illustrate mainly, is that the average K worst case is a coherent risk measure, which means it has a whole bunch of properties. I'm going to see a couple. The other properties will be illustrated. They're in the slide if you want to look at them. And additionally, it's besides being coherent, which is a fairly popular concept on risk measures, it's an even better type of risk measure, which are called distortion or spectral. And these, again, have some other properties. I'm going to illustrate a couple. The other ones are in the end of the slides if you really want to know the details. So let me move to slide 16 to show you the first property that I want. So I said I have a random variable, and this random variable depends on the particular portfolio I picked. So this V over here should be an L. So again, it's the random variable of losses for one portfolio, which is X1. I choose portfolio 1. And I'm comparing it to another portfolio, and I'm looking at the scenario. So I'm plotting, again, all the losses for the different scenarios. And I see that the random variable that I get for the first portfolio, if I look at one particular scenario, it's always above the other one. So I have that this portfolio X2 gives me a distribution of portfolios that always performs worse than the other portfolio. So I would expect that the red portfolio should have higher risk. So this is exactly the property that I want. I want my risk measure, if I have two portfolios that are clearly, one portfolio that clearly dominates the other one, that one should have less risk. And this is a property of monotonicity, and the average worst case does have that. And it makes sense. If I'm always worse than another one, I should be worse in my measure. Okay? So this essentially is a fairly straightforward idea, and in some sense considers risk and value too. Now, another property that's fairly praised about coherent risk measures is subadditivity, and subadditivity essentially it's a fancy name of saying this risk measure likes diversification. So suppose I have two portfolios, the red one and the blue one. And I see the red one behaves like this. The blue one behaves like this. So in some sense, you're seeing when the red has high losses, the blue one has high profits, and vice versa. So investing on both of them would be a good way of hedging my risk, because I know they're going to behave somewhat much better. And in fact, if I see their sum is fairly stable. So this random variable, which is a sum, has significantly less risk because it has less variability. So I would like that to have less risk when I measure it with my measure. It is exactly what I'm asking. I want the fact that I invest, let's say, on the red. I have one portfolio for the red, and I have I'm going to get some risk. I look at the risk for the other portfolio. The sum of those risks should be higher than the risk I get by investing on both. So I want this hedging effect to be measured by the function I'm using. Now, of course, there's sometimes that if these two random variables are behaving somewhat the same or they're highly correlated, I wouldn't like this to be really strict. And this is essentially what comonotonicity is, which comes with distortion. And I'll show you there's a precise definition at the end of the slides, but I don't want to go too far in these technical definitions. The idea is this risk measures do things that make sense, like for a random variable that's definitely dominated by another one, it gives the correct inequality, and it also favors hedging or hedging risks by diversifying your portfolio. Okay? So this was slide 17. Let me go to slide 18. And I said I was going to give you, in the abstract, I was going to give you, show you how these things can be easily implemented. So here's the formulation. Again, I'm just saying I have my portfolio problem. I'm minimizing the average worst case. Here's the formulation. You don't really need to look at all the details. I'm just giving you in case you want to use it. Things that I want to show is this function H here is simply the loss of the portfolio, the value of the portfolio. I can easily pick this and replace it for any nonlinear function. And the formulation still works. And because I'm simply evaluating, I mean, it's going to end up being a nonlinear optimization problem. But if you want to do it, you can do it. So here's the formulation in case you want to use it. The only thing that I'll say about this formulation is there's some auxiliary variable here that I added. If you solve this problem, you're calculating the average, you're minimizing the average worst case, but you'll get the worst case value of the optimal portfolio for free on this auxiliary variable. So you'll just get it for free if you want to do it. Again, the details is just a couple of tricks of formulation, but you can just pick it and use it.
So it is linear, is it not?
It's completely linear.
Yeah.
I believe there's just one mistake here that I'll correct. This should be 1 minus this, because I was looking at this should be the actual losses.
Okay.
But again, it's just a simple formulation. It has some meaning. You can try to understand it. There's in the literature you can find it, or you can just simply use it. It's fairly simple, just plug and play. Okay? So I just wanted to give you that formulation. So let me move to slide 19. And this slide looks a little technical, but the only thing I want to do is motivate this how risk measures relate to probabilistic constraints. And essentially the idea is if I want to minimize the average worst case, there's a usual trick in optimization, which is I'm going to replace this objective by adding an auxiliary variable and add this constraint. So it's fairly easy to see that these problems are exactly equivalent. So I'm sort of switching the objective to a constraint because I'm trying to move to constraint from something that was looking at the objective. Now, we can also see that adding a constraint of the form average worst case of the random variables less or equal than 1 can also be written like this using pretty much the same trick. So now there's a relationship between this constraint, which came from an actual constraint, and this constraint that came from minimizing an objective. That gives you an idea of sort of the relationship that these two problems have. So now I'm going to move to probabilistic constraints, and what I'm going to be looking at is constraints of this form. Essentially, some risk measure of my random variable less than or equal than 1. And again, I'm going to do it with a much simpler example to see what happens. Okay? So that's the only thing I want to see in this slide. So let me move to slide 20. So now I'm going to simplify even more. I'm just going to assume that I don't have, let's say, my new random vectors have two. It's a vector of two components, so it simply has two components, and I'm looking at 6 scenarios. And again, I'm going to assume that they have the same probabilities. And I'm going to look at the probabilistic constraint that says I'm going to look at the constraint with a right-hand side of 4 and a left-hand side, which is given by this random vector. And I want the probability of satisfying this constraint to be greater than or equal than 5/6. Now, it looks complicated. Essentially, what I'm saying is I have 6 inequalities that are given by each one of the scenarios. And I'm asking you to satisfy 5 out of the 6. You can exactly violate 1. Now, it's not too hard to see that this is equivalent to saying, worst case, with parameter 2 is less than or equal than 4. So I'm saying pick the maximum over all possible scenarios, the second maximum. So the maximum I can violate, all the other ones I can satisfy. So I'm just going to violate exactly 1. And I'm going to show you a picture that make it more clear. Now, as I mentioned, I know that the average, and this should be the other way around, I guess, the inequality should be the other way around. The average worst case is bigger than the worst case. So instead of saying, I'm going to say the worst case is less or equal to 4, I say the average worst case is less or equal to 4, this is going to be a conservative approximation. I know this is convex, so this is going to give me a convex set. This is not. So I'm going to get an easy way of getting a good convex approximation of something that was non-convex. The interesting thing is that additionally, I get all these properties that I knew about the average worst case. So let me move to slide 21 and just show you a picture of this. So these are the left-hand sides, the six scenarios that I have for right-hand sides. And on the left, I'm going to simply show you what the feasible region looks like. And what I'm plotting is exactly worst case of the left-hand side is less or equal than 4. So let me give you more precise details of what the picture looks like. Oops. So suppose I pick W6, which is a particular scenario for the left-hand side. The inequality it induces is simply W16x1 plus W26x2 less or equal than 4, which is this inequality. If I pick another scenario, I get another inequality. And for each one of these scenarios, I get different inequalities. So I get these six inequalities given by essentially this triangle and this triangle. And I'm telling you, you had to satisfy them all, but you can violate one. So in particular, if I'm in here, I'm satisfying every one of them. If I'm here, I'm violating the green one, the one for scenario W1, omega 1, and that's okay. So I clearly get something which is a non-convex region. Okay? And this is what I would do if I was saying I have these constraints and I want to satisfy them, but I don't want to satisfy them all. I only want to satisfy it with very high probability. Very high probability meaning that you can only violate one. Now the problem of that, and let me move to slide 21 to illustrate it, is that there's really no guarantee of what constraints I will satisfy. If I'm inside the star, there's always a point that violates each one of the constraints. For example, if I ask you, if you're in the star, can you guarantee that you're going to be satisfying the constraints associated to omega 1? And no, because there's a point on that tip of the star that violates it. I can ask you if there's any guarantee that you're going to be satisfying omega 6, and that's also not true. So you cannot tell you exactly what you're going to be satisfying. I have no guarantee. In essence, I have no idea of what could go wrong in this problem. So one way of giving any guarantee of which constraints I'm satisfying is going the pessimistic way and saying, I am going to satisfy every single one of all the scenarios, so I am on the intersection of every single of the constraints, which is simply this set over here. Now the interesting thing is, this is exactly equal to average worst case for the worst one, or worst case. In this case, they're exactly the same. I'm satisfying every single one of the constraints. Now, what's the relationship with robust optimization is satisfying every one of these scenarios is essentially the same as satisfying the convex hull of these scenarios. So if I tell you I'm satisfying W1, W2, to W6, I'm also satisfying any point over here. So for example, I could pick a point over here, a point over here, and I know that the constraint associated to that point, I'm also satisfying. And that's exactly what robust constraints tell you. I'm satisfying the constraints for a whole bunch of right and left-hand sides in some set. And this gives me exactly the set. So I now started considering six scenarios, but maybe there's a new scenario that's inside here that I didn't consider. I'm still satisfying it. And I can give you that guarantee, that specific guarantee that I'm going to satisfy that. So the question is, well, this is fairly conservative because I'm essentially satisfying all the scenarios. Can I do a little bit less conservative? And the way of doing it is simply changing this 1 over here to 2. I'm going to look at the second average worst case, and it just makes sense because if we go back, what we were starting with was the worst case, the second worst case, because we know this bounds or this relationship between worst case and average worst case, I could just use it, plug it, and see what I get. And if we go to slide 24, this is exactly what we get. I'm plotting essentially looking at the second average worst case on the left-hand side, and I keep my right-hand side of 4. And the figure looks like this. If you see, it's much less conservative, because definitely considers the area where I satisfy every single constraint. But given that I knew that I could go into the tips of the star, I can go a little bit. But I'm going in such a way that my ending set is convex. So this constraint is going to be convex, and it's going to be easy to solve. And in fact, there is a straightforward way to also implement it. Now, the interesting thing is, if I look at what are the points that I'm satisfying, I'm not satisfying any of the scenarios again, but I can tell you I am satisfying every average of two scenarios. So let's say I know I'm satisfying the average scenario 1 and 6, which is this point, which is essentially because of this constraint, but I'm also giving you essentially pick every two average, pick W6 and W3, this is going to be around here, and satisfying the scenario, and I'm essentially satisfying the convex hull every scenario. So by using the average value of average worst case, I can actually get an approximation of this non-convex constraint, this probabilistic non-convex constraint. And in addition, I can tell you exactly what I'm satisfying or what I'm guaranteeing to satisfy. I'm telling you, if I'm here, everything's fine. I don't know what happens outside, but I know exactly anything in here I'm satisfying. And this includes the average of the scenarios, but it also includes a whole bunch of other points that might be reasonable scenarios that I just didn't consider. Okay? And if I change the parameter, there's a similar interpretation with average that you can get. So you can actually change the parameter in case, let's say, you have the 100 scenarios and you want to look at the 20th worst average worst case. There's also a very particular meaning about that. So let me end by giving you a little bit of interpretation of these risk measures and robust optimization from a somewhat probabilistic side. And I'm saying it's direct, so I'm going to slide 25. I'm saying it's direct from the previous slide, but it's easy, but it's not completely direct. So I'll be hand-waving. But essentially, I told you I was looking at every possible two averages of the points, of the scenarios. And this is where these two averages come on this set P. The set of probability measures that simply give you weight a half to one scenario and weight a half to the other scenario. So it's going to kind of looking at taking averages of two scenarios. And I'm telling you this average, worst case, looks like look at all the expectations or the averages looking at these particular probability distributions and take the worst case. So this particular risk measure looks like the worst case of expectations, which is an interesting interpretation. And in fact, it gives you exactly what the probabilities over which you're taking the worst case are. So this is what I meant, that in some sense we can forget about the probability or what the underlying probability was, the original probability of the scenarios, because when I choose the risk measure, it's essentially assigning different probabilities. And it has an intrinsic meaning. So it doesn't really care that the probabilities are different. So this is somewhat an interesting qualitative way of understanding these this particular average worst case probability risk measure. And in fact, I mentioned coherent risk measures are good. All coherent risk measures are this form. It's significantly complicated to do it, but it's just something to interesting to know. So let me go to slide 26 to give you another interpretation. If you remember, the average worst case looks at the worst case and takes several worst cases and takes the average. And it takes the average, which is weighted with the same weights, the standard average. I mentioned that the average worst case is even better than coherent risk measure because he has additional properties, and it's a distortion risk measure. And in fact, it's known that every distortion risk measure is an average of worst cases, but now you're picking arbitrary weights, or somewhat arbitrary weights. They have to be ordered in some way, but they essentially are non-negative weights divided to 1, so you're taking a weighted average of worst cases. And now you're taking a weighted average of all possible worst cases. And depending on the value you choose, you're going to get different risk measures with different probabilities. But again, they're going to comply all the nice properties of the average worst case. So now you essentially have two characterizations to construct different risk measures depending on what you want. And again, all of them can be easily implemented in a linear way in a mathematical programming problem. Okay, so let me go to the last slide. How much time do I have?
Don't worry.
I'm fine. Okay, perfect. So I'm in the last slide, so it's perfect. So let me go to some conclusions. The first thing, I try to illustrate a little bit of how robust constraint and rest measures are related and are the same. And essentially, through this definition of, I can use rest measures to define constraints, and these constraints end up being robust constraints. The good thing is that, so what are the use of this? Is, well, it's an easy way of adding risk control to things that have expectations, essentially. And equivalently, it's an easy way to solve conservative approximations of probabilistic constraints. So essentially, if you have an expectation and you use this, you're going to add risk control. If you had a probabilistic constraint, you can replace this, and now your problem is easy. And this essentially is equivalent. For the scenario case, it's very easy to implement. I gave you the example for the average worst case. There's essentially, for any distortion risk measure for scenarios, you can write a very simple formulation. And in some sense, you don't really need a priori scenario probabilities, because on your definition of the risk measure, you're going to implicitly consider taking different types of probability measures into account. Okay? And let me just finish. Let me show you the next slide with 28, which is essentially the reference. If you want to know more about this, essentially every single thing I told you in this talk is described in detail on this paper by Bert Siemens and Brown. And if you really want to know the details, there's two books that are related to this one. The first one is mostly about robust optimization. The second one is about stochastic programming and includes a detailed treatment of what risk measures are. It's a little bit technical, so I would say everything that you need to really implement these things and use it for the scenario case are in this paper. So if you read this, you have absolutely all the information that you need to use robust optimization and risk measures and incorporate them into your optimization problems.
All right. Thank you very much.